This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Robert Reeves from Datacl.
I'm Robert Reeves. I'm CTO and one of the co-founders of Datacl. And what we do is help align those database code changes with your application code changes. We've seen that we got all sorts of automation for the compiled bits. We've solved that problem. But too often, we're leaving our DBAs behind. We are just sending a ticket, emailing a SQL script, calling them, texting them, slacking, saying, hey, can you change this? And that doesn't align with how quickly we are on the application side of the house. We got to fix that because right now we've got all sorts of innovation and speed happening on the lowercase a side of the application, very little on the database side. In fact, we're still using SQL scripts, which is the same way Larry and company did in 1979 when it was running on VAX, Oracle V2. It's the same thing. At Datacl, we help speed that up.
So we're actually here at DevOps World, which is all about agility and speeding things up. DBAs aren't known for their speed of response, mainly because they're paranoid about the database won't work or changes will have massive implications and take down the core data store. How do we find that line between being responsive to the speed of those developers who want it today, they want it yesterday, they want it faster every time they contact you, but at the same time ensuring we don't screw the enterprise?
DevOps teaches us that by having a smaller unit of change, we can have less impact on the target environment. Of course, that means that if we're having smaller units of change, we have to have more units. We have more applications. We have more services. We are delivering multi-channel content, things like that. If we are going to accelerate delivering our applications, we have to have a smaller amount of change that happens more often. We haven't done that for our database changes. We have had these massive changes. We're going to cram it all in at once because it's very hard to get time from a DBA to manually review these SQL scripts. That's what we're trying to do at Datacl. We're trying to take the DBA out of that manual review process. We have some technology that will automatically scan these things and see if bad things are going to happen. Enforce naming conventions, but also enforce like DBA 101 stuff. Don't add a foreign key unless the columns in that foreign key have an index. It's pretty straightforward stuff. You'd be surprised how many developers forget that because that's a performance issue. DBAs are looking at that because they get beaten about the head if there's a performance issue. And that's why they want to go slowly. They want to go deliberately. Because if something goes wrong, well, guess what? They miss a piano recital. They miss a Little League game. They miss a date night because they have to restore from a backup. They're the ones on the hook. Yeah, we like to beat up on our DBAs as an industry, but I think we've kind of beaten them up on them a lot. And it's time to give them some love.
So how do we change the tooling we use? As you say, the problem is they spend a lot of their time trying to validate if those scripts make sense before they allow things into the database arena. There's massive pressure now on the amount of data we're gathering. There's massive pressure on being able to analyze that data and find new truths for the business. What automation do we add in? Do we add in automated testing? Do we allow them to decouple their databases into smaller pieces? Do we have some mechanism by which we actually put lots of little pieces of database out there and actually, you put the piece that's applicable to that application near that application so it can be tested faster?
The answer to that question, which one do we do, is yes. All of these things that you've listed are things that increase the value of the enterprise. The one thing that we've been talking about that does not increase the value of the enterprise is executing that SQL script, pushing that change out. We need to automate the lower order tasks. On the way here, we've got a company in Austin. That's where Datacl is based, Austin, Texas. There's a company called Briggo, B-R-I-G-G-O, Robot Coffee. So they have, looks like this kiosk thing, enclosed, half the size of a shipping container. When I go through security, there's that little lull where I'm waiting. Luckily, I'm TSA pre, so it's a little lull. But I order from my phone coffee. Now, I know you can do this at Starbucks. But here's the thing. It will never be as fast as the machine. Coffee ain't bad. I get it exactly how I want. It always comes out perfectly. There's no mistakes. And so that's what we have to do. We have to take these tasks that are tedious, mundane, lame, No fun. And then we need to take our DBAs, which I would argue are the brightest, most valuable asset that we have, people asset that we have at our companies, because they know where all the bodies are buried. And we need to put them on the things like, how do we monetize that data? How do we move to the cloud? Should we be looking at other data platforms? How does NoSQL play in here? Is there something better than Oracle we should use for this application? They need to partner with the dev team, and they can't do that if they're just drowning in a sea of tickets. So what should we automate? We should automate the low-order, low-value tasks. Those things need to go away.
One of the challenges, though, that they face is the number of data sources people want to access today. Historically, they've ended up doing massive ETL operations in order to bring it in, build that data lake, and allow you to start querying against it. The reality is that that's machine intensive, it's resource intensive, it's time intensive, it's testing intensive. How far are we to the point of being able to say to people, it really no longer matters where your data is? We can automate our testing and your access to that data so that the database management side of this is no longer part of the delay in DevOps.
I don't have an answer to that problem. That's a big one. I've got data in DB2 for Z, IMS. I've got it floating around in a bunch of documents in Mongo or something like that. I don't have an answer for that. But what I do know is that there are some really smart people that are focusing on, hey, we just released a new version of this app, go add a column. They're focusing on that stuff. And we're having too many people on conference calls on a weekend night to do this stuff. And that doesn't really encourage people to take risks and solve these problems. What I do know is that if we don't free up our DBAs, if we don't release this asset to solve those problems, they ain't never going to get solved. And so I would argue that if we can take care of the drudgery, the human toil, human mischief, and we get rid of that, then we can solve these problems. It's kind of like when washing machines came out, or dishwashers. And there was a time where people said, no, we can't bring these into the house. Whatever will the housewives get up to? Now, we know that's just complete BS and pretty much a terrible thing to say. However, that's to some extent, there's a little bit of that right now in IT. We can't free up our DBAs to do this stuff. They need to be focused on this. And in reality, it's like, no, they need to be focused on what they believe is important. Instead of them being at the beck and call of the app dev team, being like a janitor at an elementary school, walking around with sawdust, cleaning up bodily fluids and stuff. They need to be focused on things that really increase the value of the company, and we need to free that. Hopefully they can solve that problem of how do we access the data.
One of the things we've done over the last 20 years is we've tried to flatten those structures. We've tried to get the applications closer to the data, the users closer to the application, on the grounds that the fewer tiers we have, the faster things work. But that then relies on an awful lot of trust. It relies on a lot of security, because the flatter it is, the easier it will be for a mistake to have larger ramifications. Databases and security have always been a struggle point for organizations. When you lock it down, nobody can get access to anything. When you loosen it up, people panic that the wrong people have access. How do we instill a different mentality in terms of being more secure?
Well, I would like to see no application having direct access to a database. For example, you're an application developer. You work at an insurance company. You're coming out with pet insurance. Term life for pets. And it only covers kitty cats and dogs. So if you have a turtle, goldfish, yeah, we're not covering that. So there's your product spec. We should not give the app dev team direct access to the database, because it's a responsibility and a hassle and a heartache. How about we create web services that they can use to access that database? And they wind up consuming this web service. We have an API contract. Right there, you now know that these RESTful APIs are how we're going to get to the database. We don't have to worry about giving credentials and those sorts of things. We can be very clever about certificates or tokens, limit access, because this is an app talking to an app. We can lock it down. We can have a physical connection. That's cool. I would like to see us go in that direction instead of saying, well, we're going to change the password every 30 minutes or 15 minutes, something like that. How about we come up with a way that encourages innovation? We allow folks to have access to the data, but we don't have a person actually having the ability to run a SQL script. But let's use the API.
We've tried web services back in the early 2000s and it failed because we made them such a black box of something in, something out, that people really weren't sure what they were getting out could be trusted. They had no way of validating what was coming out. When we talk about automation with APIs, one of the challenges we have here is from a security perspective, a machine-to-machine interaction that is calling an API looks perfectly valid. Nobody actually spends the time to ensure those APIs are absolutely secure. Is there something we can learn here from the low-code, no-code model? And instead of writing large APIs and large web services, we actually start producing small APIs. APIs that do specific jobs that we can test, we can approve, we can secure, then we can just chain those APIs together as needed.
Yeah, the Lego model is far superior. Are you going to be able to build the Golden Gate Bridge with Legos? Yeah, probably. I don't think it could carry the load that it has right now. But yeah, it could work. Very expensive. But I think from a software perspective, we need to have these smaller, more consumable pieces. Going back to DevOps. Look, IT folks, and I'm guilty of this myself, we love building huge things. We love big. It's fun. But there is a grace and an elegance to a screwdriver. It is simple. And sometimes it's great to bust out that $2,000 lithium ion Makita with all sorts of torque and has a hammer function. And that's great. But you know what? A screwdriver will do. And instead of us building for this future far off with millions and millions of concurrent users, how about we just solve the problem? And then if we need more, how about we add another screwdriver? So that's what microservices allows us to do. Instead of having this one big, massive Makita drill driver, well, we have one screwdriver. Oh, I'd like to use a screwdriver. Well, this is software. Make another copy. Fire up another container. Oh, two more people need it. Great, we have four. And so that allows us to scale up if we have these little tiny, tiny bits of functionality. It also allows us to manage it better. However, I have seen diagrams of rideshare companies' services architecture. That's a bit of a nightmare. However, I hope all the people that are listening to this podcast, I hope their companies grow up to have that kind of scale at some point, but you don't yet.
But that scale where we talk about having lots of small tools and duplicating as necessary is a nightmare in the way we currently license everything. If we look at most database licensing and management today, particularly from the large database vendors, it becomes horrendously expensive once you try and split up and run across multiple machines. How do we make licensing on databases fit for this world?
That ain't my problem. That's their problem. And I'll tell you, those large database vendors, they need to get with it. Sorry, the world has changed. Make peace with it. They are providing a service to their customers. That's what software is. It's service industry. That's where it rolls up to in GDP. It's not a thing. You're not making stuff. You're providing a service. And if their customers do not want to purchase it that way, they need to change. I see a huge amount of value in what the cloud providers are doing. We certainly, not only with Azure and AWS, DataStax has just released Constellation, which is Cassandra's a service. Good for them, because Cassandra is a pain to set up. So they made it easy. And it's licensed by the drink, the amount that you're going to store, IOPS, those sorts of things. So you get to choose how much you're going to use. We certainly see this with Oracle Cloud Infrastructure and autonomous databases. They're focusing more on making it easier for their users. But you're right, that price point has to go down. That's the stick. Here's the carrot. The database provider that figures that out is going to win. Fine, you sell smaller bits and pieces. You're not going for home runs. You're going for singles and doubles and walks. You will generate more runs. You will make more money in the long run. That is what we've seen certainly with AWS, which is so successful that it's able to prop up the retail side of the business, which has just lost money since day one. They will win, and they'll figure it out or they'll die.
But part of that challenge then, when we move from old school massive customization of the database where we spend all this time and effort making it work, is we move to configuration. Configuration gives us agility. We can just spin up a new copy, configure it, make it work. Except as we discover from AWS, configuration is not a magic bullet for anything. Misconfiguration is something beloved of security vendors and hackers because they know that most people won't actually read the configuration instructions. They'll do something quickly. quick, easy, think they've got it, and there's no way of validating the configuration. If we're going to have this agility and we're going to go to a service mentality where it's about configuration, not customization, what's got to change in the way the configuration systems are built?
We have got to get all the usual cloud antibodies together in a room, or DevOps antibodies, or cloud, or whatever. That's typically security. It's the database administrators. It's also procurement. These folks, back office, finance people, they're more focused on CapEx. Some of them aren't. You see large companies that are moving to the cloud. Vanguard's a good example, and Jeff Dowd, CIO over there. That's where I got the cloud antibody stuff from. And that was his approach. He said, look, we're going to the cloud. This is happening. Make peace with it. But he opened up seats at the table. He brought in the database folks. He brought in procurement and networking and security. And he said, what do you need to see to make this happen? I need you to be a partner, not an enemy. Here's your seat at the table. You are at the council, and you can weigh in on this. You can't veto, but you can shape where this is going. That's all these folks really want. They have concerns, and they want to know that they're addressed. And if they think that they're being ignored, they're going to fight you. And you can't fight against security. All those folks have to do is go to the CEO and say, if you do this, you're going to be on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. And that is terrifying. That's the nuclear weapon. And so you can't fight against that. What you can say is, instead of saying, why can't we? Hey, security person, instead of saying, why can't we do this? Tell me how we can do this. What do you need to see? And if you do this, you're going to be the security person that enabled our move to the cloud, our ability to adopt DevOps. You're going to get a raise. Ah, then things get interesting. And then things start to move. So how do we make this happen? Bribery, not extortion.
So if I was to ask you what your top three things are that companies need to stop, rethink, and start doing better now, what are they?
I would say number one, whenever you hear, that's not how we do things here, that's not SOP, that's not in our runbook, why? Well, how did that get in there? Understand the lineage of where this comes from, because a lot of these ideas are old and busted. So you need to figure out, they might not be relevant anymore. The folks that wrote them might not be at the company anymore, and they just hung around. So we have to really question why that's there, but not like a jerk. Like, hey, help me understand this. Where did this come from? Why? Help me understand. Play Columbo. Oh, just one more question. Oh, you know, I don't know. Be helpful, a little dumb. Try to figure it out. I would say number two, figure out your value stream map. I checked in code to it's released. It's out there. And that's where you go through each one of the, you got a block and stick diagram, a flow, and then you put a time on each one of those sticks connecting one block to the next. I've checked in code. There's a build. Well, what happens there? How long does the build happen? Well, we're going to push out the app. We're going to call the DBAs or file a ticket. How long does that take? And so if you figure out that value stream map, that's the first step with DevOps, I would argue. Then you know where to focus. Don't just, whoa, hey, look, we're doing the DevOps. No, no, no. Find out first where you need to apply it. It could be the database. It could be the application. Maybe the application's really easy, but you think adoption's going to be fast. So you're going to go there first. That is a rational choice. Do that. But have a reason behind it. That is going to help you do the third thing, which is look for low-value tasks that can be automated. Find things that can go away. And that individual who is responsible for that task, retrain them. Put them somewhere else. Get them a promotion. Have them go get certified in something. Put them on a different task because, one, we have a very tight labor market. We can't afford to lose people. And, two, they have a just huge amount of tribal knowledge stuck between their ears, and you don't want to lose that. So those are the three things I would argue.
Robert, thank you for talking to us.
All right, thank you.